Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Back, it's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. You know, one of the good things about this show is that sometimes I can manage to get people on this show who know a lot more than I know. And it's nice to have Martin on earlier. And it's nice to have Chris Francis on now. I wish Chris had been sitting here when somebody asked me about what to do about the trees. Chris Francis runs Chris Francis Tree. What's the name of the organization? Chris Francis Tree Care? Is that the name of it, Chris?
Yeah, that's right.
Yep. And he's a really great arborist, really knows what he's doing, really does his research, really is looking at the most progressive ways to deal with a lot of tree problems. And it's always fun to talk to him and work with him. So we were talking about some of the problems that may develop from volcano mulch coming around trees in the first part of the show, and somebody was asking me about it and saying, look, we've heard you talk about it. Tell us, you know, what can I do? I may have 2 acres of these trees. And I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, that's a lot of trees.
Yeah, sounds like she probably doesn't have a lot of soil built up around the base. It's probably just a lot of organic matter, and that would probably come off pretty easily. She could probably rake a lot of that off, especially if they're mature trees, probably not going to cause a lot of damage. You know, a young tree or a thin bark tree like a maple or something, you could really damage the bark, but I think she'd be fine for just taking a rake and kind of, you know, raking some of that stuff around the from around the base of the
good
tree.
So I told her to send us a picture, and if she does, and I'll share it with you, and okay, we'll decide if we need to reassess. The question did come up, you know, what is the tool that we were talking about that I could not remember that went out of my head?
Yep.
Please say the word, Chris, for us.
So, well, it's commonly called an air excavation tool, and so there are manufacturers of that. There's 3 different ones. The most common one is an air spade, and so, you know, just like they used to call, when you made a copy on a copy machine, they used to call it, hey, we're going to make a Xerox. But, yes, you know, you're actually making a copy. You were just using a Xerox machine.
Right.
But so this air spade is probably the most common tool that's used to do that. There's also an air knife and a soil pick. I've used all of them. They all work about the same. It's basically a trigger, much like a gas pump, you know, would have. And then it's allowing air to go through, and it concentrates the air down into like a cone as it comes out, and so you're concentrating a lot of air at one place. And the way that it works is not really a lot of pressure, so you're only operating off about 100 to 150 psi, which is, you know, your average compressor for air and up tires or something like that. It's just a large volume of air. And so your average compressor that somebody's going to have in their garage may be producing 5 to 10 gallons per minute. The compressor that we're using and the reason they're so big, what they're doing is they're making anywhere from 185 cubic feet per minute to 385 cubic feet per minute. So a large volume of air moving very quickly, at a fairly low pressure. And so what that does for you is a non-invasive procedure for removing that soil around roots, versus if you start turning the pressure up more, then you're going to wind up causing some damage to it.
And the reason we remove the soil around the roots is because when it builds up too high on the trunk, and too high on the trunk, I define that as basically if I can't see that first root emerging, that's too high. But how would you define too high?
Yeah, so I want to see the entire trunk flare exposed. And so, you know, if you look at a trunk, it's fairly round and, you know, may build a little taper as it comes down. But then that transition where the trunk meets the roots, that's the trunk flare. And so, you know, you could look around at a lot of trees and they just look like telephone poles going to the ground. They're obviously buried too deep. You look at some of these very ancient trees, especially some of the, you know, the big live oaks, magnolias around, and you see that trunk flare, that transition, and you know, where those big roots are coming off. So that's what we want to see.
Yeah, the base should be considerably larger. Where it enters the ground should be considerably larger than the tree is about 3 feet high.
Yeah.
And if you don't see that, then we got a big problem. So you want that. It's kind of a like a skirt flares out at the base. That's what you want at the base of that tree right before it enters the ground.
That's right. And a big problem with that is some of the air and gas exchange, and there's some issues, but probably the biggest one that we see is what we term girdling roots, and they're roots often from that same very tree that wrap around the trunk and the trunk flare, and then they end up strangling the tree. So the roots and the trunk don't graft together. Oftentimes, roots will graft with other roots down below the soil. You'll get trunks that can graft with other trunks. That's a totally different show, but sometimes they don't and cause some problems. But roots aren't grafting with the trunk. They're they're totally different material. So that's the problem.
And they're almost like they're at war with the trunk, and that's the problem.
So, and it gets worse because the trunk grows; it has to continue growing. Yep. That's if it doesn't, it dies. The root has to continue increasing in girth, and so they're both getting larger. And so it would be bad enough if you had a rope or a string or a chain or something there. It would kind of compress on it, but both of these things are both growing. So it's a pretty fast decline there.
Yep. So that's good. So there's our explanation. Somebody let's address one more thing, and then we're gonna get to the live oak situation. But listen, if somebody wanted to use an air compressor, typical air compressor, which I wish I had a good air compressor, by the way. Mm-hmm. But a typical air compressor is not going to have enough air to really make a huge impact. But somebody said a pressure washer can work. Mm-hmm. Will you talk about that?
Yeah, so it can work. And I've used a pressure washer to get around roots and doing things. Obviously, a pressure washer is going to make a muddy mess.
Yeah.
And so, you can have a lot of water and mud sliding all the way around, but it can work. The biggest problem with the pressure washer is, that first word, pressure. So there's obviously a large volume of water moving through there, but it's more pressure than it is anything. And so I think the average pressure washer works at about 5,000 to 6,000 PSI. And, so you're moving a lot of water and you're jetting it into a small area. And if anybody's ever used a pressure washer, know that you can blast the paint right off the side of your house. You can blast the mortar right out of your bricks. And so as you put that, close to a tree, then you can blast the bark right off. You can cause some problems. So what I would say to someone using a pressure washer, is to dial that nozzle down, to where you fan it out, and then get back farther away. And then maybe as you get a little bit closer, you can kind of see, how things are working. But it's not the ideal tool, for doing that type of work.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is great. And thank you for clarifying all this. And I think that should really help. I want to talk about the live oaks in Bienville, but we're going to come here to that. We're going to hit a break here, and so I don't want to have to interrupt us. So I'm going to hold off on that. We're going to come back. Listen, when we come back, Chris is going to talk to us a little bit more about telling us what he knows about the live oak situation in Bienville. And he's not omniscient. He doesn't know everything, but he knows more about this than I know. And so we're going to try to figure our way through this, make sure that the right things are happening as best we can. And we're going to do that. But right now I wanted to a couple of people had some questions that I wanted to address. Carol in Bay Minette was asking me about laying potted plants and covering them during cold spells. And she asked me some very good questions. She said, do you do this because of the wind, or do you do this because of the contact with the earth increases the temperature? And my answer is yes. It does both. It's very effective at mitigating both the actual temperature and the fact that the wind strips heat off of a plant and strips moisture off of a plant very quickly. And that stripping moisture off may be as important as stripping the heat off, as it turns out. But laying the plant down on the ground means that it's in contact with earth that even on a fairly cold day is almost certainly going to be above freezing, well above freezing. maybe even 10, 20 degrees above freezing. So it's a huge heat sink that brings all this heat up, and laying it on the ground gets it out of the wind, and then putting a cover over it, it makes a huge difference. So all of those things are helping, Carol, when we do it, and it can be very effective to lay potted plants down. It's what I'm going to do with my blood orange. If it gets very cold, I got some great blood orange on it this year. Man, it's 20, almost 20 years old now. Great tree. That's about how I've treated it every time. But we're going to be back to talk to Chris about live oaks here as soon as we get back. Thanks for being on, Chris.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Okay, listen. Hey, I've gotten an earful about this over the past several days from a lot of people. And I did not see the news story, so I'm kind of in the dark. I've seen a little bit of a printout on the news story, but apparently WKRG, or one of the TV stations, did a story about live oaks in Bienville Square, and I don't know, but I'll tell you what the people call me who said this. Said, oh, they're going to cut all the trees down in Bienville Square. I'm sure that's not true. I'm absolutely sure that's not true. It's like stories get kind of transformed in the telling. And honestly, stories sometimes get transformed in the telling, even with the news reporter. Him or herself can sometimes maybe not quite get it totally accurate. But you know, it's a curious thing because something's going on there, and I think Chris may be a little better follower of this than I am. So, Chris, I mean, tell me what you've heard about the Bienville Square situation.
So, yeah, you're right. It was a WKRG news story, and there wasn't a lot in the news story, but one of the things that really jumped out at me, it said, the arborist said five trees need to come down immediately because someone could get seriously hurt. And so, you know, I'm looking at that and I'm thinking, something's not right here. And so the reason something's not right is because that's not normally what an arborist would say. And so the thing is, the way that risk assessment is performed in arboriculture is that we're looking at the trees. We're looking at risk associated with particular targets. You know, that could be people, cars, buildings, what have you. But then we're looking at things and basically giving data to the owner or the tree risk manager, who in this case would you know, maybe be the mayor or the council or, you know, a commission or something, and then letting them make the decision. So, you know, you have a tree in your yard and it's got some issues because no tree's perfect. And then so we basically let you know the issues that it has, we let you know some mitigation options, and then you get to decide how much risk that you're willing to live with. And so when it said the arborist recommended that these trees are being removed, that was a big red flag for me. So I thought, okay, well, you know, maybe the person writing the story got a little bit confused on, you know, how that, you know, came about. And so I looked into it, and the guy that did the report, the guy that did the assessment, is another certified arborist from Louisiana. But that's the qualification that he has. He does not have the tree risk assessment qualification. And so that kind of explains things, which the tree risk assessment qualification came about approximately 5 years ago, probably going on six now. That changed the way that tree risk assessment was done. Before that, the old way was to kind of go look at the tree, start picking it apart and detailing out all the things wrong with it. And then as a result of that, you know, there was a lot of, hey, this tree's got all sorts of problems. You know, if you don't cut it down, then it's going to fall and kill somebody. And, you know, you're going to be liable. I'm going to be liable. The whole world's going to come to an end. And so with the tree risk assessment qualification, it really changes the way that the arborist looks at the tree, that looks at risk, and also he's somewhat insulated from that because he's not the one making recommendations. as far as this tree gets removed, this one stays, one tree fails, and they say, you told us that that tree needed to stay, and now you're on the hook. It doesn't really work that way anymore. And so I would say, as a result, probably a lot more trees stay. There's a lot fewer trees that are, you know, that are removed as a result. But that qualification is very important for someone that's doing that type of assessment. What's also interesting is when I went through that program, and they do this all over the country, probably all over the world, I went through the program, and we did our outdoor portion, guess where?
Yeah.
The Enville Square. So the trees that were looked at in the Enville Square by, you know, all of these qualified arborists going through the program, you know, I bet that we looked at probably those same trees that have been assessed. And, you know, we picked those apart in our report and, you know, looked at various, you know, targets and occupancy ratings and things like that. And so, you know, I was from here. A lot of people had come in from all over the place. There was one guy from, I think, Chile, but they were from all over. And so they're looking around. They're seeing there's not a lot of people there. And I'm thinking, well, there's not right now, but there will be, you know, at Mardi Gras and other occasions. So, but anyway, all that played in. But I think that that what's going to happen is the city's arborist, who does have the tree risk assessment qualification, and he does have some pretty sophisticated tools, he's going to go out and look at these trees, and he's going to make the assessment from there, and then he's going to give this data to the, you know, the tree risk manager, which, you know, I don't know who that is. You know, maybe it's an attorney, maybe it's the mayor, whatever it is. And then they're going to get to decide what happens. But it's probably not going to be removal. Unless a tree is just really, really bad and falling apart, it's probably not going to come down. There's a lot of other mitigating options, and it may be just simply to move the target. You know, maybe you can put a barricade or a fence around that tree and keep people from being around it. Maybe it's just if, hey, it has a big dead limb, let's cut the big dead limb off.
Yeah.
You know, if it's supplemental support, you know, maybe a tree has a crack or a split, you could bolt it together. You could attach it to a nearby tree or building. There's some other options for that. Probably the most favorable one for those trees is going to be reduction pruning,
yep,
which significantly decreases the size of the tree. And so you're going to decrease leverage, you're going to decrease weight, you're going to decrease the sale. And so you're really going to decrease the likelihood of failure. So that's probably what's going to happen with a lot of those.
Yeah. So in an urban situation like that, one of the big issues is compaction of the soil.
Sure.
That's always going to be an issue in an urban right, park like right. that. It's really hard to deal with. There are some new tools to deal with it, but that's certainly one of the things we can begin doing. And the reduction pruning is so simple and in a way, and it takes care of so many problems. It doesn't solve all the problems. Sometimes you just – that's not going to solve it. But, man, you can do a lot with reduction pruning.
Yep.
I'm shocked at the news report, which may or may not be accurate, that suggested that that may or may not reflect what the arborist did. Who knows?
From what I understand, the news report is accurate. It's the report that's flawed.
Okay.
So that's – From what I understand, and you're right, I have limited information, but that seems to be the case.
Well, that's interesting. The group that put this report together, I don't know anything about the group. It's really the first time they've come into my consciousness. It's an urban park something or another, which is an interesting thing. I don't know any of the people on the group. None of them seem to have any qualifications where trees or plants are concerned. So they may not know how to really report this. If they're an advocacy group for more park space downtown, I think that's a great thing. That's a great thing. I just don't know if they, when they sent out an RFP, when they did a request for this, which apparently this group did, it's a nonprofit group. No, we don't hear a lot about it, but they sent out an RFP, and those groups, that group is, feel free, any members of that group to call us, you know, this morning and chime in, but they sent out a request for somebody to do this themselves, and I don't know how they ended up with some guy in Louisiana. Louisiana's a great state. It's a wonderful state. It's a beautiful state. But I don't know why we ended up with a guy in Louisiana coming to Mobile. If he's better qualified, that's an excuse. But I'm not sure that we're seeing that he's better qualified.
I don't think so. And that's the Downtown Parks Conservancy is the name of that. So, yeah, I think, you know, from what I saw, his qualifications were certified arborist, and that's it. And he may be a really good one. But locally, there's three board-certified master arborists that all have the tree risk assessment qualification.
Right.
And so just with the quals alone, you know, that's going to make them more qualified to do an assessment like that locally, no travel charge. It's a little odd to me, that it was done. But I'm glad that the city's arborist is getting an opportunity to go in and look at the trees, you know, again. And, you know, apparently he's got them mapped out on where they are, so he's going to be able to find them and look at the guy's report and see what he said and then try to, you know, confirm what he found. And you know, what pretty much the assessment was, I would say, maybe level one, maybe level two. But, you know, kind of where the flow of things go is, if you found the problem, unless it was just awful, like I said, you know, if it's cracked, if it's actively failing, then we've got major concerns there. But, you know, most of these trees are not. And so he could have recommended a level three assessment, which would be more advanced. It could be, you know, maybe a resistograph. It could be maybe sonic tomography. It could be, you know, an aerial inspection, you know, something that would look at the tree a little bit, you know, more in depth.
And what Chris is throwing around are very sophisticated new technology that allows us to look inside trees, understand what's going on in there, understanding whether they're hollow without actually invading the tree. So they're very, very, very useful tools. We got to take a break. Chris, can you come back and just talk a little bit more?
Sure.
Yep. So we're going to be back in this next segment to sort of work out some of the last details on this Live Oak situation. If anybody knows anything who's associated with the downtown group that did the report, love to hear from you. Feel free to call in. We know what we read in the papers. and there ain't much of a paper anymore. So we didn't actually see this in the paper. Anyway, give us a call. 251-343-0106.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Welcome back. It's the Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Yeah, we got Tax Man over here riled up about them trees. Don't mess with my trees, folks. There's a reason to worry about trees in Mobile. We've talked about it a lot. There's a reason to worry about trees in Fairhope because a lot of them are in bad shape. They do fall over. They do cause problems. We have seen even live oaks cause problems. But those problems are, and I'm going to say it, those problems are identifiable. We have ways of dealing with them. We have ways of identifying the problem and for the most part, fixing it. Even the trees, and I, you know, Chris and I have looked at some trees that have fallen recently that have done some serious damage to houses and cars. In most of the cases, and I think in most of the cases, we could have recognized the problems early on and mitigated some of that damage or even prevented it from occurring. We didn't need to take the trees out. And some of the trees, actually, we couldn't have predicted that they were going to fall because the problems were underground. Chris, by the way, the tree, we argued about it a little bit. There was a tree that fell on George, Georgia, that was really weird, just tipped over towards the house. And we were trying to figure out how old it was, and I am now of Chris's camp. Chris was right. It was we have a picture when that tree was planted. It just never grew very much. It was always struggling with that site, And, you know, there's probably some soil issues there and some muck issues there. So we got tree problems. We need to address them. We talk about that all the time here. But taking the tree out in a place like Bienville Square is really, you know, that's a last resort, even in my mind. And I'm all for taking out trees sometimes, but when they pose a real danger. But Bienville Square is where the trees are supposed to be. So let me ask you, Chris. You said you had a bunch of arborists. Tell me about these arborists. So there were a whole bunch of arborists there, what, 2 years ago?
Let's see. It's probably been 4 years since I went through that qualification. You have to renew that one every 5 years.
Yeah.
And so I know I've got to re-up in another year or so. So there's I think there's about 2 days of class time, you know, inside. And then there's some time outside that we're spending, you know, looking at actual trees, poking and prodding, filling out reports, looking at different things. And we did that at Bienville Square.
So this is how many different arborists were in – how many folks were there looking at trees?
Oh, I didn't get a count, but there are probably about 30. And in order to qualify to be able to sit through track and even take the exam for that, you have to prove that you're a certified arborist, and you got to have you know, there's a process where you go through. So, you know, these aren't brand new, you know, fresh out of, you know, high school or college, you know, looking for an extra thing to put on their resume. You know, they're making sure that these guys are qualified and have, you know, the credentials prior to even obtaining that qualification. And so, yeah, you know, we've got, you know, different guys there. There was, Dale Dickens from the Alabama Forestry Commission. I know there was a guy from South America. There were guys from all over the place, you know, arborists from all over. And so we were looking at these trees in the park, and we didn't look at every single one because we weren't there to do an assessment of the whole park, but, you know, we were looking at trees scattered around, and nobody at any time said, oh, everybody come over and look at this. This tree has got major problems. You know, it's probably quite the opposite, you know, whereas we were kind of looking around and we'd see a defect or we'd see something, and, you know, we'd say, well, you know, you might not have this tree where you live, but yeah, this tree can handle a lot of issues. And
so it's 30. I mean, so you got 30 folks, and yeah. You know, I got to be stretching a little bit, but it's sort of like having 30, a group of 30 people, and I'm going to characterize them as both top flight professors in their work and graduate students working with them on this site. 30 folks on this site 4 years ago, looking at the trees in Bienville. And what they did is they looked at these trees and said, you know, they've got some little problems here and there. We can fix this. We should fix this. And let's try to fix this. But there are little problems. Nobody said, we need to come in wholesale and take out a bunch of trees here. So I just want to put that on the record and give some context to how surprising this new report is, if it's accurate. So I haven't seen the report. We know what was reported to by KRG. We don't. There was no sense from any of the arborists that any of these trees were such a threat that they had to come back.
Yeah. And again, we didn't look at every single tree, so, you know, we could have missed something. But, you know, these are guys that are well experienced, even from a distance. You know, there wasn't anything that we just picked up on and said, hey, everybody come look at this. You know, we need to study this, you know, huge display of conchs or basidial carps, or, you know, there's a huge column of decay, or, you know, we're missing all the roots on this side or something like that that would typically be associated with a, you know, one of these, you know, that were, you know, doomed to fail very quickly.
Yeah. And I'm also going to point out again, and James sent me a message about, you know, he's been trying to get the city to look at his oaks. And the city staff they're very short staff. The city does not have a lot of forestry staff. In fact, they've reduced the staff considerably. So they're really struggling. This report was not done by city foresters. It wasn't even hired by the city. It was hired by a nonprofit. I don't know whether it was under the direction of somebody from the city. We don't know that. But the nonprofit, which was the Downtown Parks something or another, hired this guy to come in, and that report was turned in by them to the city, and then it went to KRG, is what we understand. So it's not the city's. This is not the city's determination. This is a private group's determination that the trees that a guy they hired, that the trees should. He says we think he says that they should come down, and it's not like these trees haven't been looked at just a lot. And I will also say, you know, anybody who says that these trees don't need some trimming, they're also not telling the truth.
Right.
These trees
need some
work.
Help. And you know, most urban trees are not in the ideal environment. You know, we've plucked something out of the forest where it has everything that it needs and put it in the most unnatural spot that we can,
yeah.
And we expect them to thrive. And, you know, they can struggle. Live oak does better than a lot, but, you know, it's still not ideal.
Yeah. And to be clear, if these were a bunch of water oaks and somebody said 11 of them need to come out, and Chris might say, well, let's think about it again, and I'd say, you know, probably 11 of them need to come out. But these aren't water oaks.
More accurate, yeah.
These are live oaks.
Yeah.
And they're very – they are – you know, they're not perfect. As Chris says, they're not perfect. They don't always – they're not going to survive everything, and we put them under some really tough situations, but they're better than most trees at surviving it. So there we are on this situation in Bienville Square. I hope we're intelligent and smart about it, and I hope that that we give the city's forestry department the time it needs to do a real assessment on these trees and to do a better assessment, a more thorough assessment, using state-of-the-art equipment to look at whether there really is rot, and to do the basics first. Just do the basics first. Get the good pruning done to keep the weight off the tips of those branches. That's almost inevitably the biggest problems come from too much weight on the ends of the branches. Anything else that the tree's got a problem with, that's what's going to tip it over the edge. Is that weight literally? It's going to be the weight on the tips of those branches. So, you know, we need a better assessment of that. And it's really good that Chris came in today to talk to us about that. And again, if anybody knows anything more about the group and why they call for this and or about the assessment, please give us a call today and let us know. And we'll be glad to talk about it on the air. I'm sure that we need to do it. One other thing, and I, you know, for me, looking at Mobile's tree canopy, particularly downtown, Mobile's tree canopy originally was about having parks. It was not about trying to spread trees down every street, which is something we try to do now. Which, you know, I think there's a way to do that, but it's harder, and it has to take a lot of thought. And you can't plant a live oak when you've got a sidewalk that's, you know, basically 7 feet away. You know, you only got 7 feet of sidewalk and you got a building and a street on either side. It doesn't make any sense. You can't plant a live oak in a situation like that because there's not enough room for that tree to grow, and it causes huge problems. But parks, man, if we're going to have trees, that's where they need to grow. And we have a little more latitude with trees and parks because – There isn't a structural impact, an immediate structural impact, in many cases. We're not impacting structures. If a sidewalk is raised a little bit in a park, well, live with it. I mean, that's not an issue. It's part of having a tree. We could be even smarter about our sidewalks if we tried, and build sidewalks that don't suffer the kind of pressures from tree roots that we have now. But we don't try very hard. And so if you think we can just come in and say, okay, well, let's solve our sidewalk problems and let's make this easy. Let's just cut all these trees down. You've lost your city. You've lost your city. You've lost what makes that city attractive. Am I preaching, Chris?
You are, but I think it's good information, and you know that you know, trees do have problems. There are things that will have to be mitigated, but you know, I agree with you. Park is a much better spot to have trees than the area between the sidewalk and the street. And you know, as you're saying that, I'm picturing the city of Mobile saying, you know, hold my beer, watch this, because they've done that. They've planted huge trees between the sidewalk right. and the road, all up and down, and some of that leads to some pretty rough consequences. But they've, you know, they've done it, and that's not really the ideal situation. We should be planting smaller trees in those smaller root areas, and leave the bigger trees to bigger, you know, root areas,
and leave parks. The big trees in the parks.
Yeah.
And leave them.
Yeah. If and there we are can. Ways to handle the sidewalk issues very simply. You know, it doesn't have to get super sophisticated.
Right.
There are ways to handle the raised root issues and all those sorts of things. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Chris, it's always good to have you.
Yeah, anytime.
Thank you for spending your Sunday with us.
Sure thing. Enjoy.
All right. Hey, we're going to be back. If you got any questions, you've been saving them up. Give us a call, 251-343-0106.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. It's the Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Boy, did we talk about a lot of stuff today. Still, I'd like to know a little bit more about the live oak situation in Bienville. We'll try to stay on top of that. We'll know a little bit more about it next week. Had a lot of questions that I didn't get a chance to answer. I'm going through here. Ooh, I'm trying to remember them all. I had this question from somebody about pawpaws. Can pawpaws grow really well here? Yes, they can. There's a lot of... Yes, they do very well. They do very well. I've got some pawpaws growing wild in my yard now.
And what are pawpaws again?
Huh?
What are pawpaws again?
You know, picking up pawpaws, putting them in your pocket. Picking
oh, I know, but there may be a lot of new folks living around here.
It's a member of a tropical fruit family that manages to live in Alabama. It's lived here for millions of years. And it's this grapefruit. It has a really great custard-like flavor. Had one this fall, not off of my trees, but off of some trees in the woods. Just absolutely delicious, like a cross between a banana and apple and vanilla custard.
Wow!
Oh, it's unbelievably good. Unbelievably good when it's good. It's. The one problem with pawpaws is you got to have two different varieties. We could get into this for a long spell. So if anybody's got questions about pawpaws, you got to call me back next week. Let's talk about the pawpaws. Let's talk about what it takes to make it work. It's an interesting thing, but they're really an interesting plant. A banana circle. I'm not sure what you mean by banana circle, so you need to call me so we can talk about what you mean by – somebody asked me about a banana circle. I don't know what we mean by banana circle. I'm not sure what that's about. So we'll have to see. We want to see. Tony, I'm going to – Tony, call me in next week. Let's talk about trimming the base of that live oak. It's a good question, and you send me a message next week, Tony, when we have more time. Let's talk about that. Mike, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, good morning, Bill. I had a question about Satsuma tree.
Yes, sir.
I've had great years of you know, really good, tasty fruit, and years where there's hardly any. But this year, I was really excited, but then really disappointed. The fruit on it, it's huge. I mean, there's lots of them, and they're almost the size of grapefruit, but they're really, really pithy. You know what I mean? They're kind of dry and pithy, and I didn't know. Is that something I did? What caused
so
that?
Is
it just a bad, you know, can I do anything to fix it in the future? What do you think?
Well, a couple of things happened this year. Did your tree lose a lot of leaves last winter?
It did on the top. I tented it, but then it rained and it iced, so almost the whole top of the tree where I had a tent over it sort of got burned back. But all the fruit came off of the bottom half of the tree.
That's right. So here's what happens, I think, in those conditions. When you and two things are going on, at least, and there may be some other things that I'm not aware of or not thinking of, but two things are going on. When you lose a lot of leaves, I have found with a Satsuma, the fruit quality declines, and a lot of the problems with rag, where your fruit has a lot of white stuff in between the skin and the fruit, and mm-hmm. and oftentimes fruit quality in many ways, when the fruit gets too much sun, it gets a little sunburned, it gets a little bit of a problem. That can be an issue because there's not enough leaf to fruit ratio, and because when you lose leaves, the quality of the fruit declines for a lot of reasons. That's it. So that's part of it. The other part is that stink bugs are a major issue on citrus. Stink bugs are getting to be a major issue on everything, but they can be a problem for citrus. So not every fruit will be pithy if you have a stink bug problem, but every fruit that's been attacked by stink bugs, like the big leaf-footed bugs and some of the other stink bugs, they can get at least part of the segments in each fruit will get really dried out and desiccated.
I had them on there. I didn't realize they would affect the citrus the same way they do. You know, tomatoes and other things.
Yes, they do. And so I found that the fruit that were on the outside of the tree seemed to have a lot of the fruit I first pulled off had a lot of desiccation. As I got into the interior of the tree, I didn't have as much damage from those from the leaf-footed bugs and other things. What are we going to do about that? I don't know. We've been talking about it for a long time. We've been talking about what we're going to do with all these stink bugs. It's if we didn't have enough stink bugs here. We've actually begun to introduce more species of stink bugs. It's crazy. People are crazy. I mean, so it's just it's a real issue, and I don't know. We're going to have to figure that one out.
I'll get the shop vac out there. I didn't realize I didn't bother picking them off there as much as other things because I didn't think they would, you know, really mess up the fruit. But, yeah, I'm finding the same thing. The smaller fruit on the inside is juicier and better. But
right. So it's definitely that. So there it is. Man, shop vacs are probably state-of-the-art when it comes to stink bugs. I can think of nothing better. So
I'll get my car and then the Satsuma.
Yep. So use it next year, and I think when you get a little more leaf canopy, the fruit won't be as big next year. The fruit was big because that happens when you get a reduction in the number of fruit, which is what happened because you lost the buds off the top. And next year your fruit won't be so big. It'll probably be better as long as we don't have another really cold spell, because the leaves will be back. You have a good leaf to fruit ratio, and then if you deal with the stink bugs, you're going to have great fruit.
Okay, sounds good.
All right,
I'll do it. I also want to, as a side note, I say it goes for one of our local Christmas trees. I mean, it decorates itself with edible ornaments.
There
you
go.
Know, whether you're busy or not. I'm voting for not many pines do that, so I'm putting it on the alternative Christmas tree list.
There you go, and it made me remember that there's another one that I often recommend to people is kumquats. So you can get a little kumquat bush for Christmas and have it filled up with fruit. Keep it in a pot if you like, and just, you know, put it in there. Or a calamondin, both are really beautiful. They're just, of course, you got to make orange your theme for Christmas, but I think it's a good Christmas theme orange. I'm happy with it.
It's a winner. Tasty.
Yeah. All right. Hey, Mike, it's good to hear from you. As always, keep us posted. Good. So Johnny in Grand Bay is asking me, can you grow pomelos? Johnny, not in the ground. I'll just tell you, you're going to be really disappointed. You might make it through 1 year, might make it through 2 years, but it's going to get blasted. It's not an easy one to grow for us. Grapefruit is probably a little better, though I worry about grapefruit for the average gardener. I think that's something that it does only in special places does grapefruit do well. But pomelo is a difficult for us to grow. There are a lot of great citrus that we do well. Satsumas we do as well or better than any place else in the world. Maybe Japan, where it's native, is a little better, but just because they know how to do it better. But our climate is perfect for Satsumas. It's perfect. It's good for great for clementines. Clementines, my clementine has been beautiful this year. It's great for pumpkins. It's good for a lot of oranges, but particularly the oranges that were the traditional Gulf Coast oranges, like Hamlin. Hamlin is a great Gulf Coast orange, and some others. Boy, did we have a lot to talk about. Boy, we're going to be talking more about these live oaks next week, I can tell. It takes a little while for everybody to digest all this stuff. So we're going to be back next week. Give us a call back next week if you didn't get all your questions answered today. Hey, it's good to talk to you guys.
You can take all the tea in China, put it in a big brown bag for me. Sail right round.